Welcome back to the Athenaeum Review podcast. Our guest today is Bonnie Pittman, and we're talking about the power of art.
Well, I also wanted to ask a little bit about your background. I think you told the story at one point of when you were in school or when you were a young person, you taking a trip. You grew up in Provincetown, mm-hmm. Is that right? And you took a trip to the National Gallery of Art in D.C. And I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about kind of how you got into this.
Yeah,
field.
Well, it was I was lucky enough to have a mother who loved art and studied art history, went to Europe a lot, and my grandparents were very, very influential, and they lived in Stamford, Connecticut, just outside of New York City. And as I was born in Connecticut, and then my parents went and lived in Provincetown, which is this talk about hippie dropout community with artists, and Hans Hoffman lived there, Motherwell lived there, So we had a very famous summer crowd. But basically, you had two jobs: you were either an artist or a fisherman. Right. And my family didn't really fit into either of those because we came from Connecticut, but that's where I grew up. And then summers were spent with my grandparents, and so they would take me to the Metropolitan all the time. And my mother knew I loved art, and I was a very good young artist, and so she would take me to the museums all the time. Yeah. And when I was about 10 years old, we were moving from Provincetown to Florida. Now, that's a huge leap in culture and life in every possible way. And on the trip down, we stopped at the National Gallery of Art, and I thought I was in heaven. This was the most exciting period. I had been to the museums before with my grandparents in New York, but I had never been to the National Gallery. And it was something about the light and the openness. And then they had in every gallery, they had a guide. And I don't know whether you ever saw, you're probably too young, but it told you about every single painting in the room. And so you saw the paintings on the wall, they had very minimal labels, but this gave you more descriptive labels. And I thought, this is just heaven. It's absolutely heaven. So I have a very visual memory. And so at the end of, my mother took me there for 2 days in a row. My brothers went to the Smithsonian, other museums, the History Museum, the Natural History Museum. I didn't care about any of that. I just wanted to go back to the National Gallery. And I bought dozens of cards, postcards. Yeah. And then I recreated the galleries in a notebook and had that for years and years and years. And so I relived that experience over and over again, even though I was in hot Florida. Yeah. And it was just an awakening. And there were two paintings. One was the Tondo by Raphael of the Madonna and Child. And I just thought, you know, this just has to be the most beautiful painting I've ever seen. And then later, I saw the Renoir little girl holding a water can, which reminded me, I'm embarrassed to say, a lot of myself. She was just in the blue dress with that sparkling blondish hair and holding this little watering can in the garden. And that was something that I did with my parents for years. And Renoir has a wonderful way of painting flesh and children. Yeah. And it was, you know, they were very different paintings, but they both have stayed in my soul forever. Yeah. And so that's when I knew I was going to go work in an art museum for the rest of my life, which I've been able to pretty much do.
Wow. And then I know we don't have time to talk about your whole career, since you've done so many things and undergraduate and graduate and different positions, but maybe I could ask you about how you came to Dallas originally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was for a position.
I had a long career in museums, and I'd worked at the Winnipeg Art Gallery, at the New Orleans Museum of Art, at the Smithsonian's, at the Seattle Art Museum. I've been consultants to over almost 250 museums around the country, art museums in particular, but also natural history and zoos and botanic gardens. Botanic gardens are very similar. It's like the living version of an art museum. Everything has to be no touch and quiet. However, through that saga, I was in San Francisco, and I was working first at the Berkeley Art Museum and Pacific Film Archive, where I was the deputy director, and then from there, I left to come here to Dallas. And I had been in Berkeley for 10 years and loved it. Didn't like the earthquakes, but I loved my work there. And Jack Lane, and I also worked at a, after 5 or 6 years, I left the Berkeley Art Museum and went to work for the National Golden Gate Parks there and ran a museum called the Bay Area Discovery Museum, which is an indoor-outdoor facility on a historic site. Our buildings were 150 years old, built before the Civil War, and they were intended to guard the fort, the gate, Golden Gate, as we know it today. And so it was a huge art living artists program. We brought in all kinds of artists to draw from the environment and to teach children and adults about the importance of caring for the ecology and the creative spirit of people in the Bay Area. And so I did that for 5 years. And the people, my art museum friends would come and they'd say, why are you in this museum that's, you know, not a serious art museum? And I would look at them and say, when have you ever had anybody hold on to your front door and scream, don't take me home? And that happened to me dozens of times every day, where the children, who really are the future of life, as we all know, the children would not want to leave. And that's because the quality of the experience with artists and scientists was so high and meaningful to them that they literally would hold onto the front gate going, no, take me home. So Jack Lane was the director here, and Jack said, invited me to come. And it took 18 months and a lot of persuasion by the leadership trustees here in Dallas, Dee Dee Rose and Margaret McDermott, the Rachofskis, to get me to leave a very happy place in the San Francisco Bay Area and come to Dallas.
So how did they convince you?
Well, it was very funny. Two people made a huge difference. The first one was Margaret McDermott. And Margaret, I had many lunches with her, and she'd say, when are you going to make up your mind? Because, as I said, it took 18 months. And she finally said to me, you need to come to Dallas because one person can make a difference. And I thought, oh, wow, that's a really interesting idea. And then the and she was right. I mean, I came in with a big portfolio to transform the museum from a sleeping place to a place where the community engaged actively, and to build the collections, which I love doing. I love working with the curators and building, buying new works of art. And the other person who was so important to me was my son. And he came down, he kept saying, Mom, why is it taking you so long to leave San Francisco to come to Dallas? And I said, well, you know, I have the best of both worlds, and why do I want to do this? And he said, you want to do this because the people here are so fantastic.
And so he was here?
He was just visiting. He was, you know, he was going through that struggle. He had just graduated from Boston University in philosophy, and now he writes for the New York Times.
Right.
And so David was has always been, like, even though he's my son, he's, like, so perceptive. And he saw the wavering was not so much about the opportunity, but about giving up an experience in a place that I loved, where I had a lot of friends, and taking the risk to come and build a whole new life when you're, you know, when you're older. And what David said to me, you know, come here because the people are extraordinary and the art is extraordinary, was just sort of like this clarion bell that, as Margaret said, one person can make a difference. I didn't make a difference on my own. I did it with a great staff, and and because I love the collections, and because people were so kind to me. But it was an extraordinary opportunity. In the 12 years I was at the museum, I was were the happiest years of my career. Wow. Right, except for now, of course, being at UT Dallas.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing.
Well, let me just tell you. And so then the question is, how did I come to UT Dallas?
Right.
So here I am, happy as can be at the DMA, and unfortunately then I got this terrible virus. And my wonderful friend, Hobson Wildenthal, Hobson and I, who was the provost at that time, knew each other for a very long time, and knew each other, of course, through Margaret. So we were at lots of events together. And Hobson said, well, what about if you came out after you retire and I was getting my health back? He said, why don't you come and join us out at the university, and with the great support of Rick Battelle, who made a huge difference, and Dean Kratz, they were the ones who encouraged me to really not sort of stay home and, right. But to come back. And Rick was the best. He said, the thing you love to do the most is teach. Come and be a part of the teaching environment and teaching faculty and research out here. And it has been an extraordinary period in my career. And I've done things that I never would have done before without their support. And so I'm very, very grateful to be here.
And UT Dallas, and likewise, very yeah. fortunate. Well, finally, I mean, speaking of the present, mm-hmm. I also wanted to ask you about Do Something New. Mm-hmm. And now anyone who's listening to this should look at Bonnie's Instagram, and you'll see this, a Do Something New practice. I think I saw that you said something like 46,000 photos have been taken.
Right.
And it's remarkable. I mean, it's possibly the most original thing that I've seen anyone do on Instagram. Can you just tell us kind of how you got started doing this and what it's all about?
Well, this goes back to that challenge in 2000. In 2008, I got sick when I was negotiating the King Tut show in Vienna. And when I came back, I had this terrible lung infection that is still with me and grows. And so I worked for 3 more years under very difficult circumstances and then retired from the museum for health reasons.
Yeah.
And that summer, I was desperately sad because I had left the job that I loved the most in my life. And they did a biopsy on me, and the biopsy was not good news. And so on July the 8th, 2011, I took a nap that afternoon after I finished hearing all the results, and woke up, and I literally, you know how we all have a little pad of paper and a pencil by our bed? And I wrote down, I'm going to do something new. I'm going to do something new every day. I'm going to take an ordinary day and make it extraordinary by intention. And so I'm going to meet new people. I'm going to go to new places. I'm going to have experience with the old friends, the doing new things. So everybody around me is always like, I have a new idea. And I'm going to, it can be big or little because there are a lot of days that I can't do very much.
Right.
And it can be new flavors of ice cream, thank heavens. And I don't know why I wrote that down, but I'm so grateful I did. And then it can not be work or health, and I cannot carry forward. So in a day that I've done maybe 5 or 6 things, I only put 1 or 2 on Instagram, but I write them all down. I can't take one of those and roll it over. It ends at midnight every night. So there are nights when I'm scrambling around trying to do something new because I go, oh my God, it's 11:45. So that's how it started. I thought I'd do it for, 20 or 30 days. And here I am. I think it's now 2,975 is today. And so some of them are serendipity.
Yeah.
Yesterday I was in my doctor's office and in a new doctor's office, and she had the most amazing array of encouraging signs, around her office, like, eat chocolate, and the only thing I can do is when times are tough is spin around in my chair, and they were just funny things that you could think about doing she's the head of medical services over at UT Southwestern, and it was just sort of fun to see the inside of somebody's life. And then others for me are like, last week I went to, a week ago, I went over to the Monet show with a group of friends, and we managed to arrive at the wrong time, and one of my friends who doesn't like hot air insisted that I called the director of the museum, and we got him out of his chair, and he came over and gave us this amazing tour of the Monet show. So here you are, you plan an event, and then lots of things happen that are wrong, and you just it just keeps me alive to do and to find. I think a lot of it has come out of my practice of the power of observation, which we should cover another time, it is this ability, cultivated ability that I have now of living life with joy, of being compassionate and aware of the needs of others, to meditate and be mindful and to look intensely to, I think some of the most powerful discoveries have been the importance of play, you mm-hmm. know, just yeah. doing yeah. things that you, you know, just never would have done, but I have an excuse to do them yeah. because yeah. I have to do something new. Yeah. And so each day I post on Instagram. I also post on Facebook, but I post on Instagram because it keeps me alive yeah. And keeps me real. Some days when my friends know that if I don't post for a couple of days, it's because I'm not feeling good.
Yeah.
And I just, even the simple act of posting is too much for me.
Yeah.
And so then the phone calls and the texts start yeah, coming yeah. in and I go, oh yeah, no, I'll post. So it's been very wonderful to realize that there is a whole host of people that yeah. actually follow me.
Yeah.
And you're one of them, and I'm very grateful. I also love your posts.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is, as I said, truly, truly inspiring, a real inspiration.
Yeah, it's about, you know, people ask me, why do you do it? And I think the answer is very simple. It's about resilience. It's yeah. about, you know, we all suffer. Everybody yeah. suffers. My body is not a very happy body, and so this notion of how do you bounce back, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you're in horrific pain every single day, and you can't breathe, and, you know, so you can sit there and be sad, or you can decide, I'm going to refocus my energies and find things today. To see an experience that I've never done before. And I've met amazing people through this because one of the activities is meeting new people.
Yeah.
So it's a huge gift in my life and I can't stop it now.
You're committed.
It's a life commitment. Yeah, it's a life commitment. But you're kind to ask, yeah. And now I teach it. I mean, that this is important to know. Over at the Center for Brain Health, which is another UT center, UT Dallas Center, I teach a whole program on doing something new. And it is there's a series of 4 days of workshops that you go through so you can learn how to experience this. And they're very interactive. And it helps you to develop your own practice by the time you're done.
Yeah.
So.
Well, our guest today is Bonnie Pittman, and this is the Athenaeum Review podcast, produced by Creative Disturbance. Find out more at athenaeumreview.org.